Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the PDR Cast. I'm your host, Mike Baisley, and with me today in the studio is our ever so special guest, PDR.
2020!
2020! It is indeed. It's a new year, and
another one. They just keep coming.
I know. Oh. New episode for a new year.
It won't be the only one we do, either.
That's incredible.
As in, not credible.
Yes, yes. As in, quite possibly, this will be the only one in 2020. So
we're learning. We learn from everyone a little bit.
It's true. It's true. Everyone teaches us that we really shouldn't do a podcast.
Just gonna throw this out there. I am absolutely not wearing pants right now, and no one who's listening to this can do anything about it.
It's true. I mean, yeah. I mean, even I can't do anything about it. So, how's life?
More of the same. My beard is getting long. It's too much for me. But 3 more months and then we'll see what I do with it.
Yep. Yep. You'd be tripping over it.
Yes.
Are you going to braid it?
I do not know how to braid. That is something I wish I did, but I do not. It's just like wrapping hair around one another or something.
Yeah, you usually split it up into 3 strands and you kind of weave them one over top of the other.
It's crazy.
I don't remember exactly how to do it now, but I did learn at one point, and it was surprisingly easy.
Many things are, but that doesn't mean I know how to do them.
New year, new PDR, new skills.
Too much work.
Yeah. Same PDR.
Yeah. I've got myself into a nice little rut here. Why make it different?
Why leave the rut?
Yeah.
Well, now that we've gotten this podcast into a good rut, let's shake things up by diving into our topics for this week.
All right.
So, I understand that you have a terrible topic that you'd like to save for the second half of the podcast.
The worst one, yes.
Very good. I'm going to do the mandatory top X number of things of 2019, and given the fact that I mostly just play video games in my spare time, I'm going to be talking about Shock of Shocks, a handful of games that I liked from this past year. So it wasn't my favorite year of video games in recent memory. 2017 was a really good one, I think, for me. This year and last year, 2018 and 19, were less good as far as I was concerned. There were a few standouts in there, but not nearly as many very good games that are up my alley came out in the past couple of years.
I don't know. If you're anything like me with, say, books, having a year where there's not as many that you want to read kind of helps, because then you can get caught up. I don't know if games are the same way, but
I mean, they would be if I had infinite money, but
yeah,
I don't. So, you know, in some ways it's kind of nice when it's a leaner year because I'm not compelled to spend quite as much, but I don't know. I enjoy when there's, you know, 4 or 5 really standout games over the course of a year. And this year there's really only been maybe 1 or 2 that I really, really loved. But
so how many is the X on your list?
I haven't completely decided yet. I'm staring at this list of
you're winging it.
I'm winging it a little bit. I think I'm going to try and get to 5.
Okay.
And I don't
Will
think
they
it.
be in best to worst order or just random fire?
Not going to be in order because I'm not. Maybe at the end I'll sort of pick one that I thought was my favorite from the year. But anyway, enough preamble. The first one I will briefly talk about is Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice. I don't know if you've heard of that.
That's Samurai Dark Sun? Dark Souls.
Yes.
Dark Sun is a game I've actually played.
Hey, yeah. Is that a
It's Dungeons and Dragons.
Game?
Yeah, it was. There was two games based on it back in the 90s that I played, because that's when I was a gamer.
Nice. I want to say I recently heard that they're making a new one of those in the Dark Sun
Interesting.
Series. Yeah.
I will be sure to not have a computer that can play that.
Very good.
But anyway, Samurai, Dark Souls.
Yeah, so I haven't actually beaten that game. It's very hard. And I'm sure that... I don't know exactly how far through it I am, but I would wager I'm 3/4 to 4/5 of the way through. But... yeah, I will. I think I will eventually end up trying to finish it, but I don't feel strongly compelled to do that at this very moment. But I did have a ton of fun with it when I was playing through it. It just happens to be very, very difficult. It's a twitchy reflex kind of game.
That's not a PDR game.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's almost, in some ways, a bit like a rhythm game. Which is, to a large extent, what makes it kind of fun. So the combat ethos is like close quarters sword fighting. And... since you are playing as a samurai type character, you don't have a shield or anything like that. It's not like Dark Souls where you have armor and a shield. You've just got a sword, and the idea is that you have to try and parry your opponent's attacks, and so. Especially in the boss fights, the reason it's a bit like a rhythm game is because the bosses will have certain attack strings that they carry out, certain combos, and a big part of overcoming those boss encounters is memorizing the combos, and therefore, you know, how many times and at what pace you need to hit the parry button. So, you know, you might have a quick parry pattern like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and like, so there'll be a flurry of 9 attacks in that sort of cadence, and it can be, I mean, that's where the real joy in that game comes from, is sort of memorizing those patterns and then
pulling it off correctly.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes bosses that seem just incredibly overwhelming at first, once you've memorized their patterns and you can pretty competently parry all of their attacks, then you know, they kind of become pushovers, and it's just fun to see yourself progress in skill in that particular fight. So it's a pretty rewarding game to play, though it is intentionally very, very difficult, in order to facilitate that feeling of overcoming something significant.
Does it participate in the opacity of storytelling that the other games are famous for?
Not to the same degree. There's still a little bit of that, but it's a much more explicitly told story in this case.
Right.
And also, unlike the Souls games, you don't create your own character. You are a specific character that you play in this
for
game.
For a specific narrative.
Yes.
Okay. I respect that.
Yeah, it's an interesting departure. I mean, I kind of miss being able to create my own character because I always think that's fun, but
It's literally the only part of some games that I play, but
right.
that's because I'm not a gamer. I would absolutely, if they just made a game that was nothing but a character creator, I would play that.
There was a game, I can't remember, I'm not going to remember which game it was now, but there was some game that came out a few years ago where they released the character creator for the game early so that people could just have fun making their character, like, I don't know, a month in advance of the game actually releasing. And it was free to everyone, so it was almost like a demo, except it was just the character creator, and
Nice.
you could actually carry that character into the full game once it released. But
Nice.
I don't remember what game that was. But yeah, Sekiro, a lot of fun. Shares a lot of similarities with the Dark Souls games, but not. Feels quite a bit different when you're playing it. Yeah, really enjoyed the combat, and hopefully we'll finish off that game at some point, though I understand that the final boss is quite a difficult obstacle to overcome. I've heard tell of, people spending like 5 to 8 hours trying to defeat that boss. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see how I succeed with that in the future. Have you watched any of Sekiro or?
Oh, I don't think so, not at all.
No. Okay. Cool. It's probably on the higher end of the list of games that I enjoyed this year.
Nice.
Another one that I will mention but won't really spend much time talking about, because I've already talked about it on a previous episode, is Control.
Ah, yes.
It is probably, if I have to rank, I might as well just start ranking things because apparently I'm doing that already, but it's probably number two for me this year. Sekiro is probably number three, I would say. I haven't played Control in a while, but I did get all the achievements for that game.
Nice.
And it's pretty rare that I actually do that in games. So yeah, I more or less completed the game as much as one can possibly
Nice.
do, and felt a little bummed when I had done that because I wanted reasons to keep playing the game. There is supposed to be a couple of pieces of story DLC coming out this year in 2020, so I will probably end up playing those when they come out. But I think the first one doesn't come out until March or something like that, so it's a little ways off yet. I've been recently re-watching a bit of Control, watching a playthrough that someone on YouTube did, and if you'll recall, I criticized the ending of Control because there's
I do recall the fourth wall
the
break.
fourth wall break that I didn't particularly care for, I didn't spoil it in that previous episode, but I will briefly spoil it now. There's a the main character Jesse appears to get taken over by the Hiss, which are the evil force that has infected the oldest house at in the Federal Bureau of Control. And throughout the whole game, your character is sort of immune to the effects of the Hiss. And anyway, at the end of the game, the source of your character's immunity appears to get destroyed, and your character is suddenly taken over by the Hiss, and then the credits roll. But very quickly it becomes clear that the credits are like a false credit sequence, because in the game, people who are infected by the hiss repeat this kind of chant almost, and it's as the credits roll, parts of the credits start being replaced by words from like the weird hiss chant.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's sort of like the end credits have been infected by the hiss. Or if you want to extend the idea further, you know, the game developers have somehow been infected by the hiss. The, you know, the people in the real world have been infected. And then it dumps you back into gameplay. And Jesse has forgotten everything that happened in the game. And she thinks that she's a newly hired, like, intern at the Federal Bureau of Control. And you have to play through a sequence of mundane tasks until she basically starts to remember who she is and that she's, in fact, the director of the Bureau. And then she manages to kind of push out the hiss infection from her own head. And that's basically where the game wraps up. There might be a little more gameplay after that, but more or less that's the major kind of story arc at that point in the post credits sequence. And she talks about how, the power that was preventing me from getting infected wasn't what I thought it was. It was you all along. And it seems like by the word you, she's referring to the player, like in the world. And that's kind of the, I don't know if that's supposed to be a big revelation or what, if it's supposed to be an impressive moment, or if when that is revealed to me, I'm supposed to feel excited or surprised or something. But I felt none of those things.
Validated for your hard work.
Right, yeah, maybe it's that. But anyway, I didn't really like how it ended. I didn't really like the fourth wall break. I felt like it was unnecessary and didn't contribute anything to the game. I've softened my stance on that a little tiny bit, I think, since watching a bit of the playthrough that I've been watching, because I think they've maybe written the game and had some of the lines of dialogue and things like that in the game, going back and seeing some of the early parts of the game. I think the implication is supposed to be that it's in fact always you, the player, who is this, this entity that sort of exists with this character and protects this character.
It holds up better on a second viewing.
I think so. It's still, I still don't know how I feel about it. But I do think it's not as bad as my initial impression of it was. But despite that, there's still so much that I like in the game, even if I didn't much care for the ending. The game on the whole is just so great. And I think I talked about that at length in
right.
the previous episode, so I won't get into it again. But anyway, it's it is one of the few games from this year that I'm quite certain I will remember in, 5 years' time and think very well of. So that's Control. Might as well. I'll just get number one out of the way, because it's actually
really?
A pretty easy number one pick for me, and it's also another game I've talked about on the podcast before, so I won't spend a lot of time talking about it.
Rage 2.
Yeah, exactly. No, Beat Saber.
Yes.
For VR. I looked just this morning when I was playing, and I have a little over 86 hours in that game, and I've had the game for maybe a couple of two and a half months, something like that, I think. Most days I play anywhere between a half hour and an hour of it. I usually play some in the morning before I go to work. And it's kind of become a form of exercise for me. But yeah, I still love it, thoroughly love it. And oh, just last week I actually got all the achievements in it as well.
Oh,
so
nice.
That felt good because some of them are pretty challenging to do. So so yeah, that was a lot of fun. And that's, I mean, it's definitely easily my favorite game of this year and the game I've put the most time into. Yeah, it's just a blast. I really, really like it.
All right, and so what about these also-rans?
So the also-rans for this year, I think are probably another couple of VR games. And it, that might be a bit of the novelty talking, if I'm honest.
Right.
But in case I haven't said in any previous episodes of this podcast, I've only owned PlayStation VR for about 2.5 months, however long I've had Beat Saber is however long I've had VR. And so these are both games that did not come out this year, but I didn't have any experience with them
rules.
Until this year. So yeah, I'm breaking my own rules, but I played them this year, so you know, it's I'm gonna make it count. And that is one is called Moss. Have you heard of Moss?
I have, in that you intended to do it as a topic one time. That's
I
literally
did,
the only
and
thing I know.
I will probably spend more time talking about it, but I am just going to briefly sum it up now.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the series of comics called Redwall?
I believe it was a cartoon on Teletoon when I was a kid. Is that the one with little mice?
It is the one with little mice.
Like medieval times?
Yes. So, I am not familiar with that comic series, but
uh-oh.
I have heard that Moss takes a lot of cues from that series. In Moss, you play as a weird ghostly figure that
ooh.
The game refers to, or characters in the game refer to as the Reader. And the setup of Moss is, you know, kind of like Princess Bride in the sense that when you start the game, you're actually sitting in front of a book. And as you begin to read the book, it kind of takes you into the gameplay. So you're playing the story of this book. And so you very quickly meet... I believe the character's name is Moss. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, you meet the character's name is Quill. That's right. It's not it's not Moss. So, you meet this little mouse named Quill, and Quill can actually see you in the game world, and the two of you become sort of spiritually connected somehow. And so you follow Quill around, and as the player, you actually control Quill with your controller, making Quill run around in 3D space, and Quill can run and jump and has a little sword. But you can also, as the big kind of ghostly spirit figure, manipulate large objects in the world. So you can like push big gates open and things like that so that Quill can run through them.
Nice.
And it's really fun. The way it works is like it's like you run through a series of little dioramas, basically. I think that's the best way I can describe it. You know, you don't, but the scene fades in from black, and you're staring at this little you know, diorama like screen. And and then Quill will kind of run in, usually from the left side, and as you'll you'll help Quill traverse through, typically to somewhere on the right side of that screen, and then Quill will kind of run down a path into the distance or run through a doorway, and then everything fades to black again and then comes back up, and you're in a new diorama and you see Quill kind of entering again on the left. So you can, of course, with the VR headset, you can look all around and, you know, lean in to get closer to objects in the scene, and you can usually kind of gaze down the path that Quill has just come from, and you'll see the previous diorama that you were just in. You know, it appears to be one continuous world, but effectively your vision just moves from one fixed point to another fixed point down the road, so to speak. It's the first game along those lines that I've played, and it's really enchanting. It's really fantastic. There's a, you know, it tells a fairly simple story, but it's a really fun fairy tale like story, and there's some really great moments, like and your interactions with Quill are really fun too, because again, Quill can see you in the world. So if you lean your head down to look closely at Quill, like Quill will look up at you. And if you lean in really close, then Quill's ears kind of fold back and Quill like starts to cower a little bit because you're getting too close. You know, it's like, it's clear that she's like a little bit uncomfortable because you're leaning in too close. And, you can do things like pet her head and stuff, and she responds to that. And you can pick her up and move her around a little bit. And there's one really charming moment where you're manipulating this strange birdcage like contraption that has a bunch of different doors on it, and you have to kind of get Quill through it to get to the other side of the level. And at one point Quill's inside this thing, and I said it's like a birdcage, but it's more like a hollow cylinder that has some doorways in it, so you can kind of see into parts of it, but it's not cage-like in the sense that you can see the entirety of it, of the innards.
Right.
So at one point you can get Quill into this segment of it, but there's a door directly in between you and Quill, but you can pull the door open, and then Quill runs out and like gives a little excited squeak and holds her hand up for a high five, and you can like high five her, and it's very charming. it made me very happy to be able to give Quill a high five, because they've animated that character exceptionally well. So it really does feel like there's this cute little living being running around in front of you. It was a really, really fun experience. The big knock against the game, and I'm about to sort of spoil the ending, is that it doesn't really end. It's like it wraps up as book one of Quill's adventure.
Okay.
So it feels like the
Quill will return in Moss another day.
I mean, that seems to be the implication, but I've never heard anything about a Moss 2, so I don't even know if there's a second game coming. Like, I've just never heard any talk of it, and Moss came out at least in 2018. It might have even come out in 2017. So, I'm not sure if there's going to be another one. Having said that, it's, you know, what is there is really lovely, and it was a lot of fun to play through.
I was hoping you were going to say that the ending was ruined because it revealed that you, the player, were actually the one controlling everything.
Yeah, that's right. So a fake credit sequence rolled, and some of the words started getting replaced by the hiss, and it was just, it was all weird. Oh, so that was Moss, and the other one is also a VR game, and realistically, maybe this one should only be an honorable mention because I haven't even actually played it that much. But I had lots of fits of laughter while I was playing it, and you know, I'm not someone who laughs easily, so it was a lot of fun. And that is Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Ah, nice.
Which also did not come out this year. So
now you're talking my language.
Have you watched any footage of this?
I have not, actually. I think there was a trailer. I think they had a trailer with some of the real cast members playing it. And I feel like it couldn't have been more than 5 minutes long. So that's the extent of what I know. But.
Right. It's essentially a Star Trek Bridge Simulator. You know, you play... again, this is in VR, and when you go into a mission, you choose a station on the bridge that you're going to be in charge of, and so you can play as the captain, or you can play at tactical, or the helm, or the engineering station on the bridge, and it's a game for up to four players. It's all multiplayer. You can play it single player, but I actually haven't. I've only thankfully, I have one friend who also has VR that I was able to play it with, and when you load into a mission, you can't stand up and move around or anything. You're just sort of fixed in your chair on the bridge, though you can swap roles if you want. So you know. Which is really good if you only have two people playing and don't have a full kind of contingent of four players, because AI characters will fill the vacancies for absent players, but it's almost always better to have a person controlling everything.
Because you never know when they could become smarter than the Enterprise and, like, become alive.
That's right. That's right. I mean, one of them could be Moriarty. You just never
exactly
know. But there's something really, I'm sure in the not too distant future this kind of thing will be totally mundane and normal, but you have a body in the game,
right?
And your friend playing the game also has a body representation in the game, and you use the well, on the PlayStation, you use the PlayStation Move controllers, which is to say you have basically a little baton in each hand, and those controllers get tracked. So in the game, you can move your arms and hands around, and it's reflected in the game, and that's how you interact with all the buttons on the, you know, the bridge consoles and all that sort of thing. But you can do very simple, normal things like wave to your friend, or like turn your head and look at them as they are represented in this simulation of the bridge of the Enterprise. And that sounds very normal and mundane, but it's actually both really strange and really fun.
Nice.
It almost feels like you're controlling a marionette. And, you know, you can do goofy gestures with your arms, and your friend can see that and react. And yeah, it sounds so simple and mundane, but it really is bizarre and thoroughly entertaining. And yeah, my friend and I were just, we were having fun playing the game, but we were also just having a blast being goofy and
Yes.
flailing our arms around and.
It's underappreciated when you get to our age.
Yes. And also not nearly as funny when you do it in real life, usually.
Right.
But just in
I
this
mean,
business.
as someone who I profess to not be fun at all, I would never do it in real life, but
Right.
and we'll have to find out someday if I would do it in a game.
Yes. I kind of wonder if you wouldn't have difficulty resisting the urge.
Right.
I'll put it this way. It's one of those things, it's you, but it's not you. It's kind of
Right.
you performing as this character on the bridge. And, much in the same way that people will describe, like, putting on a costume or wearing a mask or something to be sort of liberating in some sense, because you're suddenly not yourself. You're another character, and that makes people feel free to behave in ways they normally wouldn't. I think this has very much that same sort of effect. Like, I'm not a particularly animated individual. And neither is my friend who I was playing this with, but we suddenly became two giant goofballs, like, doing silly slapsticky stuff, which we would probably never ever do in real life. Yeah, we had each other in stitches, like, it was by doing just the dumbest things. So yeah, that one, I mean, I'm putting it on my list. Probably at number five, but it should maybe just be an honorable mention. But I just had so much fun playing it that I feel like it deserves mention.
Fair enough, and it's Star Trek, so I'm glad it got mentioned at all.
Yes. And I do actually have one honorable mention that I'm gonna bring up just because it was also pretty good. And that is the most recent Star Wars game. Which has the cumbersome title of Star Wars Jedi: colon, Fallen Order. I might talk about this one more in depth down the road, but long and
Okay.
short of it is, it takes a lot of cues from the Dark Souls games, so it tries to be a little bit hard, and it's primarily lightsaber combat. You play as a Jedi type character. And it's focused a lot on dodging and parrying and stuff like that. Gameplay wise, I think it's just okay.
Right.
It suffers, I think, coming out in the same year that Sekiro came out, because they're both focused on, effectively focused on sword fighting, more or less. Sekiro just does it way better. Yeah, the lightsaber combat in Fallen Order is okay, but there's definitely room for improvement, and I found it kind of clumsy at times. So as a game, it's 7 out of 10 maybe, which isn't bad by any means, but it's not it didn't make the top five, as you can tell, which is a very
Yes.
prestigious list. But as a Star Wars thing, it's very good. It nails Star Wars in its presentation, in the story that it tells, in its characters. A lot of the characters are not necessarily incredible, but they feel like Star Wars characters, if that makes
Right.
sense. And it manages to avoid leaning heavily on cameos by familiar characters,
Right.
which is good. There are, I think, just two cameos with known
Is one of them a
characters.
Ural Poof?
No.
Ah.
And the reason I say I think just two is that there might be you know, minor kind of extended universe characters that pop up in there that I don't recognize, or I might be forgetting someone. But the one that has been in all the advertising from the get go is Saw Gerrera, who is present in Rogue One. Yes.
Okay, so not anything I've seen then.
Right. Played by Forrest Whitaker.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I approve then.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's good. And I'm pretty certain that they got him for the game, too. So I think it's the character is actually voiced by Forrest Whitaker in the game. The other cameo, and I'll only talk about this briefly, and it is a huge spoiler. If the nobody listening to this doesn't want to get spoiled on the end of this game, and I would suggest that it's worth avoiding spoilers on the end of this game, because...
And I will furthermore point out that my half of this podcast is going to be dumb, so you can skip it right here if you don't care.
Fair enough. Fair enough. At the end of the game, Darth Vader is in it. And if I had known that in advance...
I have heard of this one.
If I had known that they were putting him in the game in advance, I would have rolled my eyes and gone, oh, yeah, of course. And I would have been prepared not to like that appearance. Not because I don't like the character, right? I do like the character, but it's...
You just would have girded yourself for disappointment.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of the obvious go-to. I mean, you know, there's a handful of characters that would be first choices for big cameos in any Star Wars property, and Vader is pretty high on that list. But... they actually do it really well, and I was surprised and pleasantly so by just how well they incorporate him into the game, because he comes in at the very end, and you've just defeated what feels like should be the final boss of the game, based on the way the story has unfolded. And then suddenly Vader appears out of nowhere, and the game throws you into what seems like is going to be a fight against him, but very quickly it becomes apparent that you are absolutely no match for him. He's just an overwhelming force, and so what starts out seeming like it's a surprise boss fight against Vader is actually a surprise. You have to run away from Vader now.
Nice.
And yeah, they just make him scary, which is great, because that's, you know, when he's introduced in A New Hope, that's definitely what he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be this terrifying, you know, unstoppable kind of presence. And so yeah, for them to kind of recapture that feeling around that character was really great. So yeah, okay game, but very fun piece of Star Wars.
Nice. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So if you could pick one sentence to sum up your year in gaming, what would it be?
Beat Saber.
Ah. Good sentence.
Yeah.
I like the construction.
Yeah. yeah, the year I discovered VR, probably.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, that's a better... That's an actual sentence.
I mean, it's actually not, but...
You are correct. You are correct. Yeah, it's just a
tagline?
It's just a noun phrase, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's. I think that sums up the year, for the most part.
Right on. So we're ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
What's the deal with Crazy Chester?
I don't know. What is the deal with Crazy Chester?
Are you familiar? You probably will not be familiar with by name, but the song "The Wait" by a band called The Band.
I know the title, and I am sure I have probably heard the song.
It's definitely within my top 10. Like, I don't have an actual numbered list, but it's up there for me. I like this song a lot, so I'm going to call it stupid for a few minutes.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, it's take a load off, Fanny.
Oh, yeah.
You know that one?
Okay, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, the lyrics to this song are dumb, and I'm specifically going to focus, because I like my subjects to be, like, pointed. This one's going to be as pointed as possible on verse 4 of the song "The Wait" by The Band.
All right.
Okay?
Put the load right on me.
Yes. So the song starts. You have to read between some lines to get what's going on, really. But the song starts. The guy, who we'll assume is a trucker, because that's the way the song goes, he pulls into a town called Nazareth. He has a few little weird encounters with people. He's not having the best time of it. People are weird in Nazareth, it seems. Verse 4 goes, "Crazy Chester followed me, and he caught me in the fog." So I assume our song protagonist is just wandering around looking for... Like, we don't even know. We know that from the chorus, from the end, the last verse. Anyway, a woman named Fanny sent him to town, and he's doing a favor to her. So we don't even know specifically what his goals in town are. But so Crazy Chester, who I'm assuming is a resident of Nazareth, perhaps, catches him in the fog. Okay. From this first of the lines, I take it that he knows Crazy Chester. It does seem he runs into Carmen, who's an old friend of his. I feel like he's been to Nazareth before. He knows this populace, at least on some level. So he's met Crazy Chester before.
When was this song written? When
1962.
Okay,
I don't think that's made up. I'm actually Googling it right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say 68 is more likely. I don't know why. It just feels right.
Because I'm just automatically assuming that catching him...
68. The one that I was serious about was the correct one.
Nice. Because, I'm just automatically assuming that catching him in the fog means that he approached him while he was getting high.
Oh, yeah? Okay. I mean, it's entirely possible. The song gets credit because it uses a few biblical names as if that's in some way meaningful. They're not used in any way that implies some sort of deeper meaning to me. But anyway, okay, so Crazy Chester has come up to Mr. Song protagonist. Is there a word for the protagonist of a song? I don't know. Anyhow.
I don't think so.
Line 2. He said, Crazy Chester this is, he said, "I will fix your rack," first of all. I've always, in my head, I thought it was, "I will fix your wreck," so I assumed that at some point his truck had been wrecked, but apparently it's rack.
Okay.
Chester says, "I will fix your rack if you take Jack, my dog." So Chester is going to pay for his mechanical services by giving the protagonist a dog named Jack. That's a weird transaction.
Definitely.
Gets weirder because the protagonist says, "I said, wait a minute, Chester, you know I'm a peaceful man." What does that have to do with taking care of a dog? What does that have to do? I can't take care of this dog. I'm a peaceful man.
I'm tempted to suggest that we've just run into a whole whack of very particular slang from the era.
I think you're giving them more credit than me.
Yeah, I probably am.
But you know who else is understanding it? Chester is, because he says, "That's okay, boy. Won't you feed him when you can?" He says, "It's okay, you're peaceful. Take the dog anyway." What does that mean? What does that mean?
I mean, I'm taking this way too seriously, but my my basic assumption is that, and this is probably not right, but I'm assuming that dog is some sort of slang for, a handgun or something. And feed it when you can just means, put bullets in it and use it
Right.
when you need to, kind of thing. But
I do believe the songwriter was Canadian, not American. But
yeah, well, you know.
But I think he lived in America, though. And it's still trucker band. They got to be a little redneck.
Yeah, yeah.
For the record, in the last verse of the song, protagonist says, "Get your cannonball now to take me down the line." I'm going this time. I read the other one. I'm going off my memory now. This is one of the few songs I do know all the lyrics to, except apparently "Rack," which I thought was "Wreck." So I'm from the existence of the movie Cannonball Run. I believe Cannonball is maybe a truck.
That was going to be my guess. Was it like a truck or
right.
a car or something?
So
yeah,
that indicates to me that Crazy Chester did not fix the truck, because otherwise, why would he need someone else to get their cannonball to get him back to Miss Fanny?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a weird situation, man.
It is a weird situation. I mean, I guess we were just lucky that the members of the band were there to witness it and or at the very least...
and chronicle it in detail.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at the very least, they either met with the person that the song is about, or with Crazy Chester at some point, who relayed the tale to them. But yeah, I mean,
taking off the veneer of that last statement, unfortunately, I googled Crazy Chester at some point, and I believe he and several of the other characters in the song who are not biblical references are just references to their real life friends. So maybe this did really happen. Like, maybe it did.
It could have. It could have.
Which, you know, oddly, if this was a real story that truly happened in the actual world, it would make sense, because things are dumb in the real world. they do not stick to a narrative.
It is true. There isn't a lot of reason behind much of what happens in real life.
And that's what I present as possibly... Nah, not really. If we keep doing this, I'm going to get dumber than that, but it's just the most specific I've gotten so far on something.
I'm fine with that.
So welcome to 2020.
So I think I came up with the possibility of it being a gun, in part because of the word rack, because I assumed...
Oh, gun rack,
gun
yeah.
Rack, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I'll fix your rack if you keep my gun, Jack, on it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I wonder if there's any... I wonder if the internet can tell me that rack is slang for something.
Well, I mean, breasts.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point, but I don't think that's what it's referring to.
No. The devil shows up in verse 2. If you're making a song with biblical references, you can, like, save the devil towards the end.
Yep. Apparently, rack can mean a stack of money totaling about $1,000.
Weird. Specific. I like it.
Yep.
What else you got?
Ranger assault carry kit, a chest rig worn by U.S. Army Rangers.
Nice. That's probably it.
Yep. That's about all I got.
Yeah.
So.
All right. And, of course, we will not have mail this week because our postal carrier was kidnapped by terrorists and I refused to negotiate.
Oh. There you are again, refusing to negotiate. Every single time.
And not just with terrorists, with anyone,
Yeah,
like just in general.
no, I know. I know. Well then, I guess that means we need to bring this to a close. Any final thoughts?
None at all.
Fair enough. Well, thank you, dear listeners, for bearing with us once again. This is Mike Baisley signing off. Farewell to you, PDR.
Indeed.